from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website, 56David.com. That's 56David.com.
The Bernstein and Holmes Show.
Well, John Randall, this guy's crazy.
It's the scene from the movie The Program. Wait, Dan, have you seen The Program?
I don't think so.
You seen that movie?
Studs, have you seen The Program?
Negative.
Layla? Ray?
I have not.
I'm on an island of being the only one on this show that's seen The Program?
Can you tell us about it?
Oh, you have to go. You have to.
I'm going.
You have to.
Okay.
It's basically a movie that's based on Florida State. You know the character Latimer, right? Studs? No? No help there?
I think he's talking to you.
Seat at the table?
I've never seen the movie. Why would I know the character?
Because that character has been on social media a lot.
Starting defense! Place at the table!
He goes out there and he headbutts a window at a car and sets off the alarm.
I think we ought to tell Coach.
Hell no, you don't want to know about this.
Yeah! Make sure you tell Latimer that the NCAA will be testing on Saturday.
It's a perfect football movie.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 a.m. till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers, Bernstein and Holmes, with you on this Thursday with much to discuss. We've got Ray Diaz, Adam Studzinski, Brandon Fryer, Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka doing all of their things. And the Cubs just keep kicking us in the nuts. No matter what, you're there. Yeah, probably. And you watch and you wait, and then the game's over and then they lost. And so It never comes. It doesn't break through the offense.
Oh, yeah.
They don't score.
That's a struggle for them.
It always has been like this. I don't know why it's so hard. Why is it so hard?
Because the collection of players that they have they don't have anyone who's special. That's why it's hard. If we want to make it in the simplest form possible, they have a collection of solid players, but without someone in the middle of the lineup to bring up the solid players, it's just going to kind of look somewhere between 75 and 80 wins. Like, that's what this is going to look like, even with their incredible pitching. Like, if you're looking for the people that can be special, it's in the starting rotation for the Cubs, which is great. That's a great start. But you would think that they would be beyond that at this point.
And for the most part, the bullpen's been terrific.
Yeah.
Just score runs.
It should never feel like one run is insurmountable. But with the Cubs this year, and for a big portion of last year, that's what it's felt like.
They had to bunt. They had to sacrifice bunt. What are we doing? We know how much. I don't know if for Council that's a cry for help. But when you got Nito up there, and even, you know, there's a pause. Boog is like, oh, playing a little small ball.
And Nito has shown a lot more pop than I expected in his bat.
But for them to do that, for Council to be like, well, I'm giving away an out, for him to give away an out?
Do you remember that game where, remember that crazy game where they bunted like three runs in an inning. I felt like that was the cry for help.
And you said it. And you're like, hey, all right, here you go. This is what we got to do to score. Let's knock it into play here.
I felt like that was counsel saying, these are my options. This is what I got to do to try and win games. And it's not sustainable.
You're giving away an out with a major league catcher, a major league hitter, to move guys over, to put them in a position for someone else to drive them in?
Yeah.
What year is this?
Well, the year of our Lord, 1987, apparently.
I mean,
because that's the type of baseball that this team is capable of playing. But I think it, for me, and we talked a little bit about it with counsel yesterday, because it's been so disappointing, like you wonder if he's made the right moves out of the choices of wrong moves that he has. But I think that this is an organizational thing that they're going to have to look deep into their souls to try and figure out if they're on the right track. And because I think that and you heard Carter this morning, I think that they convinced themselves that they are doing things the right way. And I'm not sure that my hope for them and for Cubs fans is that the Cubs front office and ownership take a really long look at the approach to how they're building their team and what they're all about. There are great elements of it that make sense, but there has to be more. When you start looking around at the teams that are going to contend, really contend, and I'm talking about for divisions, because that to me is a clearer indication of how well your team is built than the dice roll of what happens inside the playoffs. Those teams are led by players that rake. Those teams are led by powerful bats and good overall players, great overall players. The Cubs are not.
They're not going to have, based on current trajectories, they are unlikely to have a single four-win player. Think about that.
Who's their highest? Is it still Bush?
Bush is at 2.2 through 97 games.
Yeah, he won't get there.
Nico Horner's at 2.
Man, I thought Nico was a little higher than that and that he might still be able to get there. And then the positional stuff at shortstop with Dansby, but
Nico's not going to do it at all. Nico's at a 98 WRC plus. He's below average as an offensive producer. And the other issue that the Cubs have right now, this is just when you're talking about approach and you're talking big picture here, you know what they are also? They're kind of old.
Yes.
It sneaks up on you when you look down here. But the way baseball time, and look, for all of us, the way time flies, especially those of us when everything starts to speed up as you get older, because every moment you've lived is less of a percentage of
all right, time on Earth. Nietzsche, that's enough of that. Let's go.
Seiya Suzuki, 29. Ian Happ, 29. Dansby Swanson, 30. Mike Tauchman, 33. Cody Bellinger, 28. And the guys about whom you're supposed to be excited, like, here's your chance, Pete Crow Armstrong at 22, and he's got a WRC plus of 49. Like, this is, they're aging, and whatever the core was, that's why this hurts so much.
How old is Dansby Swanson?
He's 30.
How long is his contract after this season?
Another five, mm-hmm. Right? Another five. But sure, and Bush is an old rookie. He's an ancient rookie at 26.
Yep.
Horner's 27 in his prime, and the way we understand this now is
in his prime, but I also think locked into an offensive profile that works if you have boppers on your team.
Sure. And Christopher Morel at 25 isn't clicking. But those are the guys. If you're looking at Morel,
Nico, Bush,
and Armstrong. Like that's
Morel, Nico, Bush.
Man, it's really hard to keep doing what they're doing. It's like, all right, at some point this will catch fire. It just isn't. It just isn't. And to hear Carter just bereft of explanations And I get it. Everything he says makes sense. He's not saying anything that's wrong. And if you can come on the airwaves and avoid saying things that are wrong, but to say, hey, we got to score more runs and prevent more runs. Yeah, that's baseball. But how? And how are you going to do this without having a four-win player?
I don't know. That's why, I mean, I want them to start really looking at, did we do this the right way? And is there a course correction that can be made? Or here's what it's felt like. And Layla warned about this in December, in January, in February. The reliance on whatever your proprietary numbers tell you about bounce back. And, oh, well, they can't be this bad for forever. Well, there might be circumstances that have allowed them to not bounce back to the back of their baseball card.
Mm-hmm.
And for the texter asking about the Brewers, I would say they are more organizationally healthy than what the Cubs are.
And we'll see what happens now that they've lost their bopper.
They lost their guy that is capable of carrying them, and it might be Dunzo time.
Yelich
for Christian Yelich.
Yelich, unfortunately, was at a 155 WRC plus. He was having a great year. He was having a throwback year.
Yes.
To his peak.
Yep.
And now they're talking about spinal surgery is a possibility.
Yeah, and it started for him like last year. Like you saw him kind of get back to it. He had those three down years in Milwaukee. Then last year, he kind of bounced back. And then this year, he was looking great. And now he needs back surgery. And whenever you hear any...
Maybe
needs back surgery. And whenever you hear someone might need back surgery...
That's bad.
Yep.
And that's something... That is a surgery you want to avoid at all costs.
You're like, I'll do all of the PT.
Yes. Talk to Steve Kerr about that. Talk to Steve Kerr about... what can happen? Even the most routine, basic, there's no such thing as routine spinal surgery.
Isn't that part of the reason that there are a lot of people who think that he won't be coaching much longer? Is because, like, just the physical toll that it takes on his back?
I don't know. I mean, he sure saw Phil struggle.
Well, it's not too long ago that Steve Kerr was having issues sitting on the Warriors bench.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you, Ray. You said it more eloquently than I did. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, for Phil, they had to create that special chair.
Just super high and comfortable.
Yeah, but it was like... It was
a throne.
Yeah, pretty much. Arranged for him to have ease of in and out. And like it was a custom-designed Phil throne there. Yes.
So you worry about that, especially when you're talking about a torque sport. So we'll see. But this Cubs thing is just not, it's not fun. Like, that's the other part of it. Like, watching yesterday's game was torturous. Because you're sitting there going, oh, they have a one-run lead. Okay, so how's this going to fall apart? Well, it fell apart with Milwaukee putting together four hits to tie the game. Like, that in itself was ridiculous. Like, even they're playing at the Cubs level right now, where they have to have all of these things happen for an outcome. But then they got a big hit from William Contreras. And you just felt like, oh, so the Cubs have three outs to get one run. And they've scored, 10 runs in their last seven games. Not going to do it. Not going to come back and win this game. And it's that... As you're watching the game, and I can only imagine if you're a Cub fan, if I'm doing this, as you're watching the game and you're going, that's a missed opportunity for an extra run or two. That's a missed opportunity for an extra run. And then you get to the end of the game and you count all of that stuff up and you go, that's why you lost 3-2.
Or you just didn't square up your pitch that you could have hit out of the park.
Yeah, Dansby Swanson had a middle 95-mile-an-hour fastball and just whiffed.
I mean, you work the whole at bat to get your pitch, and that's the one you got to drive out of the ballpark.
It happened to Morel in the second game too. It might have been Morel It was Morrell. Yeah, it was, because Kuhn was saying that's the pitch he was looking for, and he just missed it.
The fact that the Cubs right now, the guys that you're kind of depending on for a little bit more slug, are easily outed with middle fastballs that aren't over 97 miles an hour is troubling. Because that's a hard thing to explain.
Yeah, there's a difference between the painful struggles of the Cubs right now and later in the evening, what I would only describe as the Zen-like misery. Not misery, the Zen-like incompetence of the White Sox, where they've transcended. They've gone through fun bad. They've gone through like bad bad. And they're achieving whatever the White Sox, this is some sort of serenity to watch when they crumble and when they collapse. It's like when those Twitter accounts that do like ASMR machine pictures or trimming edges, and you see these things that just sort of, they end up resolving. The way White Sox games resolve into these losses the way they do, it's almost, it's relaxing. It's a great way to sort of wind down at the end of the day.
So you know what's going to happen.
To watch their losses just congeal perfectly, and the air comes out, and they lose, and they show the dugout, and guys are taking the tape off their wrists and making faces, and away they go into the night. There's something zen about that. And with the Cubs, it just hurts. It just sucks. Because of expectations and everything else, and you know the talent is there, and the fact that it's all mismatched, but the White Sox are making it almost performance art.
It's only going to get worse from here.
I know, but it's just there, and it's quietly perfect.
Yeah, I was watching it. I was watching it and listening to a podcast. So I was watching Sound Down on it. Because you saw the way that it was headed, and then the eighth inning happened, and you're like, oh, that's about right. That's how it goes. That's how it goes.
It's the same thing on Monday.
Yeah.
It was the Monday. I was watching the game Monday, and they were up one. They had like two outs, I think, in the ninth, and it's like, oh, they're going to blow it.
Of course they're going to blow it.
I'm watching it with like my future brother-in-law. I was like, dude, you know they're going to blow it.
I feel bad for Gordon Beckham, because it's like, hey, Gordon, do you want to come get some reps and put yourself in position to maybe replace Stoney when Stoney retires? Sure. Here's the thing, though. You're going to have to watch a lot of bad baseball.
Nah, we ain't taking that.
Well, yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, it's too bad. Anyway, we got to go up to House Hall. We got to listen again to see if Grody can dodge the stylings of Jay Illa while he's up there at Bears camp. So let's talk Bears next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yell.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Bears.
Mark Grody, covering the Bears for 670 The Score.
Can I get a couple minutes with you here, man?
Nah, I ain't even talking today, man. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Mark Grody with Bernstein and Holmes.
Whatever, the Bears suck.
On The Score.
It was apparently that time of the practice day when the assembled Bears media is herded up like cattle and moved. I don't know if they have, like, dogs nipping at their heels, trying to keep them all in a big group as they're moved en masse. But Mark Grody, I'm sure, is complying with all rules as he joins us. Bears training camp coverage presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. You will hear Mark Grody tonight starting at 6 o'clock on the Score airwaves talking Bears. He is with us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. What's up, Mark?
We have been herded, Dan and Lawrence, but I have found, like the movie, I have found a quiet place in which to speak to you guys today. So that is the good news. The team is on field 1 and 2, closest to Hallis Hall today. Just watched Caleb Williams go through some rollout drills right near the goal line, and all the quarterbacks were lining up to do that. They haven't done any teamwork or any 7-on-7 or 11-on-11 right now. It's all position group stuff that they got going on. A few things that I should point out to you guys. The following will be speaking today, so we'll have this later for you on the Score. Matt Eberflus, Tyreek Stevenson, Jonathan Owens will be speaking today, the husband of the Olympian. So that'll be really interesting to talk to him, and Gerald Everett, the big tight end for the Bears, will be on today as well. Other things that I have observed here so far today, for some reason, for a little while, there was a drone overhead here at Hallis Hall in the corner of the end zone, just hovering above, and then scoot. Yeah, probably. The Hard Knocks people are, yeah, because nobody went crazy, but it did disappear relatively shortly. But they are here. The HBO Hard Knocks people are out here. Pat McCaskey has been taking in the practice today. And finally, in terms of my intro to you guys today, about once a year out here at Hallis Hall, for a two-day period usually, the guys from Sirius XM NFL are out here, and that includes Jim Miller, the great former quarterback of the Bears, but more importantly, the great Brendan McCaffrey,
the V-Mac,
is out here today.
Baldy, yes. McGrindy.
So, say hi, B-Mac. Say hi.
Here. Hi, B-Mac. Hi.
There he is.
Hey.
He's Baldy McGrindy. Is that what Merv called you?
Baldy McPherson. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, lose the Gillette.
Lose the Gillette. So V-Mac is here in all his glory. He is standing about 10 feet away from me.
Give him a big hug from us, please.
I don't want to hug him. He's too sweaty, man. Come on,
it's part of the experience.
Does he at least have on a cap? Is he covering his head?
He is covering his head.
All right, good.
What's that hat you got there, B-Mac? What is it? Oh, Reese's Senior Bowl.
Let's
hat
go.
Is what he's wearing today.
Yeah. Love it.
So good to see that guy. For people who don't know, former Score guy, former suit with the Score, and he is out here and in effect today.
So since we talked about it, can you walk the listener through the process of where you guys go and what you're capable of seeing from your vantage point?
Yes, it's day to day, truly, in terms of how much we get to see. Like today, for instance, we have a great view that we are in the just behind the end zone, you know, basically bleacher end zone tickets right now, and the Bears are working in our end zone. Now that's a relative rarity that we have no obstructed view, but a lot of times we'll be, you know, just out on the, just right outside of Hallis Hall, they'll be on a far field, which makes it really difficult to see what's going on. Or sometimes they'll even be working on some specific offensive stuff or defensive stuff on one side of the field, and they'll have a line of players in the middle of the field that go across the 50-yard line, and then we are blocked from that as well. But today is a unique day so far in that we have a really good vantage point. Now, the best days out here, while it can be a little bit more difficult to navigate for the media, is when the fans are out here. Because when the fans are out here, anything goes, because obviously they can't let the fans have great views and be able to tweet and take pictures and do all that kind of stuff if we're not allowed to. So that said, the first fan practice will be on Saturday, and that's when we get the best views of this. But yeah, a lot of times they seem to go out of their way to not let us see what's going on.
I read Mark Potash's piece in the Sun-Times, and I find it interesting that he was sort of the first to begin to ask players about the difference between Caleb Williams and Justin Fields, trying to seek out guys who have been here. He talked to Tyler Scott, and he gets a quote from Tyler Scott. Justin was very electric, obviously, with both his arm and his legs. And they sort of extrapolate this into what the differences are. Are we doing this now? Is this something like, even though this guy's never played in the NFL, are we already trying to say, like, did they get it right? Is this an upgrade? Because it seems really early.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's early for that as well, but I mean, I think it's eventually, maybe it's early, but I think eventually that is a justified and proper question, because I think that, you know, everybody for a while, as the debate raged on, Justin Fields or Caleb Williams, you know, everybody had a say in that, and everybody had an opinion on that. You know, the players are going to, they're generally speaking, I think they're going to support both guys, and they're going to say good things about Justin Fields no matter where he is. But I think in the case of Caleb Williams, there are some similarities. I mean, like some of the off-script stuff. You know, we've seen Caleb Williams run a little bit more recently. A couple days ago, I saw him, you know, instead of throwing the ball away or trying to make a play downfield, I saw him blast off up the middle. Now, obviously, we don't want him running as much as we saw Justin Fields do for any number of reasons. But I think, you know, there are some similarities between the two that I'm seeing right now.
If I can just make a small addition to the equation that you put, it wasn't Justin Fields versus Caleb Williams. It was Justin Fields plus picks versus Caleb Williams. You know what I mean?
True.
Like it's not one to one, and I think that's one of the problems with that discussion. It was like it was one to one. No, it was what you would get from trading the number one pick along with Justin Fields. So anyway,
that's true, Lawrence. But I will add this: even without the extra picks of the extra players, I do think that Ryan Poles evaluated Justin Fields, and I don't think that he thought that Justin Fields was the quarterback of the future. I do wonder, even if Caleb Williams was not available for the Bears at number one, or not even in this draft, my gut is that they probably would have moved on from Justin Fields anyway, despite what like people might be saying or what you might be hearing. I think they evaluated Justin Fields, and there were too many what they saw as flaws and wanted to move on. Now, it makes it a lot easier when it's Caleb Williams and the picks to go with it. But I have a feeling, just from talking to people and seeing how they evaluate, that they were going to move on from Fields anyway.
Well, we'll see, because I depending on where they move to, I don't know if everyone's super excited about, if you're out there going, man, Bo Nix, let me tell you, this Bo Nix guy is ready to go. But that's relitigating something that doesn't matter anymore. Let's talk about something that kind of does. The defense is very yappy. It's very excited to help in Caleb's development by pushing him to be better. When they talk about the defense overall, how do they think they could get better? Because I could see a couple of different ways they could get better.
How does the defense see the offense getting better?
No, how does the defense see the defense getting better?
Oh, yeah. Well, every time I ask that question, because I've been saying the Bears defense is good, not great, not elite, and actually Tremaine Edmonds said the same thing. He was like, yeah, we got a good defense. And I said, how do you get that thing to being great? And he said, number one, start faster this year. The Bears defense was bad early in last year. They're one of the worst teams against the run and in a lot of categories early on. The Bears started their season 0-4. So multiple players have used that as their answer to how is the defense going to get better, start faster. And they all know wherever it's coming from, there has to be more quarterback pressure. There has to be more quarterback sacks this year. So, and, you know, I think that they're depending on that or hoping for some of that to come from the inside by way of Jervon Dexter. We've seen DeMarcus Walker move inside a little bit. It looks like they are Eric Washington, the new defensive coordinator. What they're trying to do defensively, from what I can discern, is they're trying to be a little bit more creative in a lot of ways, even with Montez Sweat, moving him around a little bit more. So it's all about creativity and finding ways. And if you've got to scheme it up to get to the quarterback more than 30 times this year.
Do we have a depth chart for, I mean, I look at the Arlad's depth chart that's usually a little bit behind, and I don't know when the first one officially comes out now that training camp has moved up, but I'm curious what you see in the reps. Is DeMarcus Walker going to have competition, or is he the no-doubt starter opposite Sweat?
I think they're going to roll with him early. I think he's the no-doubt starter early, assuming health. But I think if he is as ineffective, at least at times, as he was last year, that they're going to find that alternative. Now, what is the alternative?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, because
I'm struggling with that one too, Dan, honestly. Like, it's not going to be Austin Booker, I don't think.
Why not?
Fifth-round
rookie.
Everybody I've talked to has said that he's too raw, and that, like, I had one guy tell me that it should be a redshirt season for him. You know, he was, well, even in college.
That's what I was telling you yesterday.
But then Dominique Robinson, who has had every opportunity to use his height and weight and athleticism and measurables into figuring out that position, if not now for him, then it's not happening.
Well, I think one of the differences with Dominique Robinson is the Bears were horrid when he was here, and you were allowed to attempt to take a shot on a guy who was a project. They used the word with him, project. This is a guy who used to be a wide receiver converted into a defensive end. And, you know, you look at, you know, Dominique Robinson, you see why they, like, in terms of the body, like, he's one of the strongest guys on this team. You see why, what they thought about him. But, yeah, he's not, I doubt that he's going to jump up, make that step up. Look, they haven't ruled out the possibility of bringing somebody else in. I'll be surprised. It doesn't necessarily going to be Yannick Ngakoue, but I imagine that they're going to add some more help or look from inside as well. But, yeah, right now there aren't a whole lot of alternatives that we know are credible beyond Marcus Walker right now. So I think they're banking on him a lot. And then the other part, too, is, you know, they've been low-key about it, but they've said enough for me to be able to believe that they are, even though they won't say Jervon Dexter is R3 technique, they're really depending on getting more pressure from the middle of that defensive line, and Jervon Dexter maybe, you know, up in his sack total. I'm not saying he's got to be a double-digit guy, but maybe, you know, 6 to 8 sacks this year. I think that's something that they are really banking on and depending on, and you could see them, again, the way that I've seen them align defenses and what they've been doing, it seems like that is going to be, they're going to be doing that with purpose this year.
Mark, could they also, I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, and I don't mean on stunts, but could we see Dexter occasionally line up outside?
Good question. I would imagine yes. I would imagine yes. I don't think you're going to see it a ton. But with the fact that he has slimmed down a little bit, mm-hmm. With that apparently gotten a little quicker, and maybe that first step is a little better, which would enable him to come from the edge. So considering the creativity from Eric Washington, and I guess Matt Eberflus too out here, that we've seen so far, I think that's a good idea, especially if there isn't that slam dunk defensive end opposite of Montez Sweat. And I don't think there's going to be that guy. Like, even if Ngakoue was to come here, he's no savior. You know, I mean, he had 4 sacks last year or something like that. We don't know where he is in terms of his career and what's left in the tank and all that stuff. I mean,
he's gone on a couple of visits, but no one signed him as of yet, which I would kind of expect. Like, he's one of those veterans that maybe you don't even sign him until after week 1.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, like, I don't think the Bears want to sign anybody else. I mean, that's the vibe I'm getting from Ryan Poles from the very beginning of this thing. And I remember when he said during the off-season program, maybe the first day that we talked to him, you know, the fastest pass to the quarterback is from the middle of the defensive line. So, you know, getting that pressure there is going to be big. And assuming that there's going to be a better bounce back year for DeMarcus Walker, that all makes sense. I just don't think they're interested in Ngakoue. Not that they won't sign him.
No, they used the past tense. They closed that door,
seemingly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, if it becomes a need or if it becomes a problem, then, you know, then I think that they would go out and do that. But I just, it's a, he can't, like, we've been talking about Ngakoue, it seems like, for a year. But please don't tell me that Yannick Ngakoue is the savior or the key to the opposite man of Montez Sweat this year. I think that would be a problem for the defense.
No, it's a bad sign. If they go
out, be a really bad sign.
If they go out and sign him, that's telling me that they think they've got a problem.
I think they you've laid out the problem that they have. It's a problem of depth and quality depth at that position and at the three technique.
And lack of development.
And I'll just say this again, because we've had to say it for the last three seasons. When you hire a coach whose defense is predicated on getting pressure up the middle from the three technique, and then you don't really give him the three technique that he needs to be effective defensively, It's hard for me to be mad at the coach when you don't give him what he needs to make it work.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's totally and completely incumbent on them to make it work. I think another guy, too, that we've forgotten about to some degree is Zach Pickens. You know, Zach Pickens was a third-round pick. There is expectation there. He is out here. I thought that Pickens looked terrific in camp last year and then did not look good during the regular season, but I'd like to see him, you know, get to the next level, be part, earnest part of the rotation this year and make some plays. So, you know, there is that's with all these guys in that rookie class from last year. I mean, they're depending on that bounce from all of those guys to make this team whole.
Groats, as always, we appreciate you, man.
Take care, guys. Talk to you soon.
That is Mark Grody. You gave me a double air horn in that report.
Three, actually.
Three air
horns. Three.
That's good. That's good luck.
There's two quick ones.
Yes.
And then the finale.
We actually had one right before you guys got him on, too.
That doesn't
count. That was a private one, though. No, well, me and Ray got four. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you guys got four.
I like exclusive air horn.
When we come back, when I got in the car yesterday as we were leaving the station getting ready for Cubs baseball, the pregame interview that Zach Zabeman did with Mike Tauchman was fascinating in the discussion of what is going on in baseball right now with the balance between pitching and hitting. And the always thoughtful Tauchman had a very interesting explanation, including some things that I really hadn't considered about why pitchers continue to dominate and why they make hitting at that level so difficult. We'll bring that to you next on The Score.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes. Middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
You know, I've been on this thing about what's going on in Major League Baseball right now and seeing what's happening to hitters.
The run environment.
The run environment, the hit environment.
The ball.
All of it. The idea that there's just a lot more outs than there used to be, and the pitchers seem to be making life very, very difficult. To be a great hitter, to be a good hitter in the big leagues is a huge deal. To be a great hitter is really, really difficult. Just competency. And there was, when I heard Mike Tauchman interviewed on The Score yesterday by Zach Zabeman, he brought up some factors. There's some aspect to it that I had not considered. As much as I've read about it, and as much as I've read really smart people talking about it, here's another one in Mike Tauchman.
I think a really under-talked about thing about cutting like 25% of minor league teams is that there's more need to push guys through the system just because of the number of open roster spots in the minor leagues. So, you know, taking myself for an example, obviously I went to college And between college and summer baseball, I had 1,000 at-bats in college, you know, against appropriate level pitching, and then, you know, probably another 1,500 at-bats in the minor leagues before I got to the big leagues. So the seasoning there and the development of just day in and day out at-bats, I don't think that's happening to the level that it used to happen. So guys are just at-bat immature. Like, they just don't have the quantity. And then also because that arms are getting pushed up and you know, now I think with the advancements they've made in pitch creation technology and stuff, it's like what used to take an off season or a year for guys to, you know, develop another pitch, they can do in a bullpen session. Something that's usable because they're getting instant real-time feedback on how pitches are shaped and how pitches work with each other. I think it's just easier to create pitches. So now you have guys with, you know, an option for every single type of hitter. So that's just on the pitching side and, like, the hitting development side. And then that's not even getting into the fact that every single at-bat you've ever taken has been put in a computer, and then they print out exactly where to play and where to position you. So the guys up here are the best in the world at defense, too. So they're in the spot where you hit the ball, and they're the best at what they do catching the ball. So it just makes it very hard to get base hits. So if you then also don't have the skill to or the ability to hit the ball over people's heads, that, you know, shrinks the field even more for you. So I think all those things kind of lend themselves to what makes hitting difficult.
Well, now, if you were listening carefully near the end, he sounded like he was giving you sort of a thematic statement about the team that he's playing for right now. And I don't know if he was realizing it as he was saying it. He's like, you know, this is all had. And I had not taken into consideration the shrinking of the minor leagues and what that has meant for hitting development and what it's meant for the number of at-bats that you get to start to acclimate yourself and inure yourself to this kind of pitching. And then he's like, well, what you can do is hit it over the defense and take the defense out of it completely. And I'm like, yes, you're almost there. We're so close here. And he's right. He's painfully right.
It's interesting because yesterday I also listened to Tommy Pham's interview on Foul Territory, and he didn't go as in depth as Mike Talkman did, but he just very generically said, like, yeah, hitters today are not, you know, what we used to be back when I was coming up, and didn't go in depth like Mike Talkman did. But, like, to hear that both in the same day from two, you know, major league hitters, is
veterans,
interesting.
I mean, yep. Which means they're talking about it.
Yes, the guys are talking about it to themselves, and they've got some questions. I want to know what that song was. I was feeling that. So
I don't recognize that.
Is that Lee Bryce? Is that Rumor by Lee Bryce? Maybe.
Could be.
Where's the help, guys?
Sorry.
Come on. It's a genre of music I'm extremely unfamiliar with.
I don't think you're going to get a lot of help with the country.
We need to go down the hall or upstairs and get Austin. Austin might know it.
Austin will definitely know it.
Hit up US 99.
I kind of like that's a good pregame vibe song. Like, just relax. Like, you don't want to get all pumped up because it's baseball. You know, you just want to be mellow. But I was trying to Shazam it.
What you were doing. I didn't know what you were doing. Okay.
But all right.
So you're holding it up to your headphone?
Yeah, because I figured my headphones would make it easier for Shazam. Because, you know, you have to pick it up through Talkman talking and
The music has to be loud, like Bears practice loud for that to work, though.
Twitch seems to think it is Rumor.
Okay. Cool.
If you trust Twitch.
I will download that song now.
I tell you, I don't trust Twitch. They're just not people. They're not human beings.
I'm making a face turn on Twitch. What up to Twitch? I prefer Twitch. How about that? Prefer Twitch today.
Man, next up, Sam Munson of Pro Football Focus will let us know what matters to the football quants this time of year, and he'll assess the Bears next on The Score.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
You know, I've been on this thing about what's going on in Major League Baseball right now. and seeing what's happening to hitters.
The run environment.
The run environment, the hit environment.
The ball.
All of it. The idea that there's just a lot more outs than there used to be, and the pitchers seem to be making life very, very difficult. To be a great hitter, to be a good hitter in the big leagues is a huge deal. To be a great hitter is really, really difficult. Just competency. And there was, when I heard Mike Tauchman interviewed on The Score yesterday by Zach Zaidman, he brought up some factors. There's some aspect to it that I had not considered. As much as I've read about it, and as much as I've read really smart people talking about it, here's another one in Mike Tauchman.
I think a really under-talked about thing about cutting like 25% of minor league teams is that there's more need to push guys through the system just because of the number of open roster spots in the minor leagues. So, you know, taking myself for an example, obviously I went to college, and between college and summer baseball, I had 1,000 at-bats in college, you know, against appropriate level pitching, and then, you know, probably another 1,500 at-bats in the minor leagues before I got to the big leagues. So the seasoning there and the development of just day in and day out at-bats, I don't think that's happening to the level that it used to happen. So guys are just at-bat immature. Like, they just don't have the quantity. And then also because that arms are getting pushed up and you know, now I think with the advancements they've made in pitch creation technology and stuff, it's like what used to take an off season or a year for guys to, you know, develop another pitch they can do in a bullpen session. Something that's usable because they're getting instant real-time feedback on how pitches are shaped and how pitches work with each other. I think it's just easier to create pitches. So now you have guys with, you know, an option for every single type of hitter. So that's just on the pitching side and like the hitting development side. And then that's not even getting into the fact that every single at-bat you've ever taken has been put in a computer, and then they print out exactly where to play and where to position you. So the guys up here are the best in the world at defense, too. So they're in the spot where you hit the ball, and they're the best at what they do, catching the ball. So it just makes it very hard to get base hits. So if you then also don't have the skill to or the ability to hit the ball over people's heads, that, you know, shrinks the field even more for you. So I think all those things kind of lend themselves to what makes hitting difficult.
Now, if you were listening carefully near the end, he sounded like he was giving you sort of a thematic statement about the team that he's playing for right now. And I don't know if he was realizing it as he was saying it. He's like, you know, this is all. And I had not taken into consideration the shrinking of the minor leagues and what that has meant for hitting development and what it's meant for the number of at-bats that you get to start to acclimate yourself and inure yourself to this kind of pitching. And then he's like, well, what you can do is hit it over the defense and take the defense out of it completely. And I'm like, yes, you're almost there. We're so close here. And he's right. He's painfully right.
It's interesting because yesterday I also listened to Tommy Pham's interview on Foul Territory, and he didn't go as in depth as Mike Tauchman did, but he just very generically said, like, yeah, hitters today are not, you know, what we used to be back when I was coming up, and didn't go in depth like Mike Tauchman did. But like, to hear that both in the same day from two, you know, major league hitters,
veterans, I mean, which means they're talking about it.
Yes, the guys are talking about it to themselves, and they've got some questions. I want to know what that song was. I was feeling that. So
I don't recognize that.
Is that Lee Bryce? Is that Rumor by Lee Bryce? Maybe.
Could be.
Where's the help, guys?
Sorry.
Come on. It's a genre of music I'm extremely unfamiliar with.
I don't think you're going to get a lot of help with the country.
We need to go down the hall or upstairs and get Austin. Austin might know it.
Austin will definitely know it.
Hit up US 99.
I kind of like that's a good pregame vibe song. Like, just relax. Like, you don't want to get all pumped up because it's baseball. You know, you just want to be mellow. But I was trying to Shazam it.
That's what you were doing. I didn't know what you were doing. Okay.
But all right,
so you're holding it up to your headphones?
Yeah, because I figured my headphones would make it easier for Shazam. Because, you know, you have to pick it up through Talkman talking and
everything else. The music has to be loud, like Bears practice loud for that to work, though.
Twitch seems to think it is rumor.
Okay. Cool.
If you trust Twitch.
I will download that song now.
I tell you, I don't trust Twitch. They're just not people. They're not human beings.
I'm making a face turn on Twitch. What up to Twitch? I prefer Twitch. How about that? Twitch today.
Man, next up, Sam Munson of Pro Football Focus will let us know what matters to the football quants this time of year, and he'll assess the Bears next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.